black-suited hired man rose out of the driver's door, gathered a head of steam and a few paces forward to cut off Bolin's advance from his SUV. Rolling toward the human barricade, Bolin was mentally tuned in to potential snipers, perched and hidden in the sheer black walls behind the customized limo.
Lose the sub-gun.
Bolin slowed his strides, but held on to the HK MP5. He gave the muscle a hard once-over. The crew cut, the dark shades, the holstered 9mm Beretta, and the one-piece combat suit were all standard insignia of their trade.
You first.
The gunner made no move to empty his holster.
Then I guess it's settled.
The man pointed toward the passenger end of the vehicle.
Down the side. Stand there. I'll be watching you.
As if Bolin needed to be told that. The executioner stopped at a midway point on the unmarked limo. No plates, no insignia, but two antennae pointed up from the rear. He caught his grim expression mirrored in the black glass. A blast of air, cold enough to keep a meat house refrigerated, washed over Bolin, chilling his sweat-slick flesh. At first he thought the well was empty, then he took a step back, peering inside, and found the shadow sitting on the other side of a tinted partition. The freak. It was hard to clearly make out the face on the other side, but Bolin saw the outline of a hat, some kind of Jimmy Buffett beach job, then noted the visor wrapped around the shadow of a face that had no visible features.
So, we meet at last, Special Agent Belasco of the Justice Department, or whoever you really are or work for.
I have the disc, Kraman. I know all about this marvel of super technology you want to steal and sell to your so-called subcontractors. Since you've been watching me, and since you know I have the disc, then you know I know about those two kids you gave the order to murder.
I hear a hostile tone in your voice.
Well, at least your ears still work.
A few parts still do.
You're going out of business. How it gets done is up to you.
The easy way or the hard way.
Your choice. It will happen. Thornton's going down, and this Project Orion is about to get scrapped.
Ah, yes. Your single-handed gunslinging shall foil all my hopes and dreams.
Just watch. This is where you tell me anything I'm not taking into account.
Oh, what you don't know, Belasco, covers a lot of ground. For one, I am sitting at the threshold of obtaining one of the greatest discoveries of all time. Soon I will be holding the key to the future of humankind. Science fiction is becoming fact. Things that will make Spielberg stuff look mundane.
I don't get out to the movies much.
You do realize you've been extraordinarily lucky so far.
I make my own luck.
Of course. A bunch of bikers used to slapping around their women or gunning down unarmed men. Not much of a challenge.
Just warming up. Bring on the first string.
In time. Consider yourself warned, Belasco. I will not allow you or even the entire weight of the U.S. military to keep me from possessing that which has left me the monstrosity I am.
Before we wrap up the wry banter, there's one more thing.
What's that?
Those kids you left rotting in the desert.
Insignificant in the larger picture.
Which is what, again?
Why, my own immortality, of course. He who has the device could be capable of ruling the world.
Now I know you've seen too many movies.
Kraman made a subtle hand movement in the shadows.
It's you or me. The device will be taken. And tonight, there's nothing you can do to stop that from happening.
Bolin felt it in the air. Without looking away from Kraman, he raised his subgun in the direction of the black suit, who, of course, was now reaching for his Beretta. Bolin swung the subgun toward the shadow behind the tinted barrier.
This glass is bulletproof!
Not a problem. I have a few grenades I could dump inside.
You...
Maybe I'll just burn you out from behind your shield. Rip off that visor. I understand your eyes are real sensitive to light.
You're a cold bastard.
That's me, Mr. Insensitive. Looks like you'll have to drive yourself for a change.
Unless you're available?
Not for hire.
Well, I had to try.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Bolin turned and walked past the body, heading for his SUV. It was time to go have a look at the site where it was all going to happen, where the marvel of all time was housed and ready to be sold to enemies of, well, national security. Behind the wheel and rolling across the salt flat, Bolin gave the limo one last look. It was still sitting there, a black shimmer in the burning mist, fading rapidly from the soldier's sight as he motored on. Thornton couldn't decide if the wonder device of the ages looked like a giant kid's top or the funnel of a tornado. Sitting at the console in the shadowy lair of his personal control room, he stared at the object of all Kramen's desire on the far monitor. The next 2 or 3 hours, getting the device prepared the way he wanted would prove the tricky part. Worst case, he'd put on a spacesuit himself and power it up. But if it came down to that, it would mean that none of the science crew was willing to pump the thing up with radioactive juice, which in itself would mean they were all very much dead. The small nuclear reactor was housed in a special glass-reinforced bay beyond the shiny tornado funnel. The device could remain standing, like now, supported by steel cables, with clamps attached to the disc-shaped head from the reactor. Another monitor showed him the science crew was off in an adjoining room, poring over mathematical and chemical data that was light years beyond him. Numbers and symbols, he thought, that looked utterly alien. And who knew, he thought. Not even he was privy to where the mystery element that powered the thing came from, or how it had fallen into their hands. He did, though, have the clout to engineer his safety net, one of the perks that came as head of special security. He took the disc out of the safe and slipped it into his computer. Thornton punched in a series of codes and passwords only he, as head of special security, knew existed, and he was online. First order of business was to memorize the 8-digit numbers, forward and backward, since to initiate any countdown, he had to run them through both ways. As a precaution to keep the thing from falling into the wrong hands, a miniature radio detonator had been built into the skin of the device. He had the numbers down, the black box in hand, and stowed in his pocket. Kramen, calling back. He had ignored the man 2 times already, but knew a 3rd silence on his end might scramble the freak to the back door of the facility sooner than he wanted.
Yes?
Where have you been?
I've been busy making the necessary preparations.
I need a driver, and now I'm stuck out here on the salt flat. Even with the windows in my visor, the light is killing my eyes.
Slow down, Kramen. Fill me in on your situation.
And he did. Belasco again, shooting down his personal chauffeur and bodyguard, driving off and toward the facility, stranding him.
I'll send somebody.
Thornton intended to let the freak stew and curse the light for a little while before he dispatched a man. It never occurred to Kramen, of course, to endure a little more pain, climb in behind the wheel and drive himself.
When?
Soon.
Now.
He'll be there. Anything else?
Get the chopper ready. When the sun goes down, I want those cultists loaded up and given one last briefing. How many men on your end do you have a firm fix on who will aid us?
Well, that was something else I was working on before I was interrupted.
Lose the attitude, Thornton.
Is that all?
For now.
And Thornton was grateful for the silence once more. A check of the time, and he knew the 15-man backup was already bust and rolling toward the facility. They should arrive, he figured, in 30 minutes, give or take. He already had their briefing down, how the thing was going to be moved to another facility, that security here had been breached. Most of the ops he knew personally and believed if the right amount of cash was promised, they'd play ball. 4, maybe 5 ops now under the roof were the ones he needed a face-to-face with. Thornton decided it was time to have a chat with the head scientist, an astronuclear physicist named Anderson.
Mr. Anderson?
A balding, slight figure in a white lab coat looked up from his work bay.
Come to the control center.
Now?
Right away.
He waited, watching while Anderson lingered another moment, then walked out of his bay. Thornton stood, aware that the next few moments were crucial. He slid open the wall to his personal mini-armory and selected an HK MP5 SD3 subgun. The walls to his control center were reinforced steel, soundproof, but he unlimbered the Beretta 92F and threaded a sound suppressor on the muzzle. Thornton knew from past experience that when a guy found himself staring down the narrowed black eye of a sound-suppressed weapon, he tended to listen harder. Since the line in the sand was drawn, Folan didn't much care if they knew he had breached the perimeter or not. He was beefed up with firepower, though, just in case they came charging the hilltop roost where he spied the facilities. The trusty M16 with attached M203 grenade launcher was resting beside the soldier's prone post, 30-round clip in place, with a 40-millimeter frag bomb up the launcher's snout. Lugging the war bag several hundred yards from where he ditched the SUV in a wash to the east was a grueling task. But he couldn't afford to risk finding the war bag liberated from his possession when he returned to the SUV. As soon as the sun began to set, Bolin intended to slip into his own black suit, weighted down with enough party favors to entertain one and all. A battle he intended to wage on his terms, time, and place. Sipping from his bottled water, the soldier gave the lay of the land a search in all directions with his field glasses. It was broken ground, cut by gullies and washes, studded with cactus and littered with rocks and boulders. If there were high-tech surveillance devices in the vicinity, he hadn't spied them out. It didn't mean they weren't there. No posted signs authorizing use of deadly force, either. Two facilities had been built into the hills down in the valley. The larger of the two was due north. It looked like a giant silver dome. Constructed, it appeared to be part of the hill chain. Only one way in and out that he could see, straight through the dome. There was a conspicuous lack of activity in that direction, despite the grounded black chopper and five vans near the dome. Were they inside, watching him, planning their next lethal move? Let them come, he decided. The sooner the better. The more he took out of play before night, the merrier. Panning on, he searched the hills, framed shiny vents and fat smokestacks rising from the ridge. Air shafts for a ventilation system. No doubt a generator inside, probably a nuclear reactor below ground. That meant any number of levels of floors, a whole maze of interlocking halls. The sister facility was a smaller dome due west. One black van, again no sign of life. He gave Kramen a brief moment of consideration. It might have been a simple bloody task to have burned the creature out of his shield, chop him down in a hail of bullets. But Bolin figured that where Kramen went next was where the action would unfold. Lowering the binoculars, Bolin detected distant movement in the corner of his eye. He slid up, crouched, then moved deeper down the narrow cut in the hill for concealment. Adjusting the binocs, he lined up two town cars, several hundred yards off and heading his direction. No tinted glass, Nevada plates, but it appeared five figures were packed into each luxury vehicle. From their slow run across the tabletop, he knew they could make out his SUV down in the wash.
Now what?
M16 leading the way, the soldier hauled up his war bag and set off down the slope.
Do you understand what you are proposing? Do you even begin to comprehend the risk involved?
Thornton felt himself coiling up as he leaned back in his swivel chair. He felt a muscle in his arm twitch next, the Beretta so close, with Anderson standing a few feet away, staring at him as if he were insane to even contemplate such a recipe for disaster.
Let me understand this. You want to power it up to a level 10 readiness?
For full maneuvers, the mother of all test flights, if you will.
And by 2200 hours.
Those are my orders from back east. Now passed on to you.
He pointed to the red phone, the hotline to their man at the Pentagon.
You want to make the call yourself to confirm it, or do I simply relieve you of your duty now? Your choice.
For one thing, it's stretching our resources alone simply to see that it's up to level 10 within the time frame we're allotted.
Then you're wasting precious time pacing around here.
The element is of a very unstable nature, my friend. Try to understand our position, which is that our very lives are in grave danger if we go as far as you want. Once the element is infused with radiation and it is pumped into the device, well, we don't know exactly what could happen. Say, if it decides to take off on its own, perhaps reaching hypersonic speed in seconds and end up hovering in the skies as far away as Maine. The core of element-fused nuclei acts as its own regenerating and self-sustaining source of power by, we believe, an ongoing splitting of atoms, a process we still don't understand. In other words, it acts as a continual but self-contained nuclear implosion. Constant critical mass,
how should I say, only appeased, it would seem, by the element itself, which somehow keeps it from detonating into an explosion of unfathomed power, which could combine both a nuclear blast and the spread of the element in a wind of radioactive fire. And if that happens, not even we can predict the outcome. At the very least, I'm concerned about a repeat disaster, such as the tragic incident which befell my now dead colleagues.
We've fixed that problem.
Yes, added a few monitors to tell us if the element is leaking. Only by then, it would still most likely be too late. Not only that, but since the element is stored in the other facility, it has to be carefully shipped here to even begin.
You're wasting time. Are you going to do it or not?
Anderson hesitated, shaking his head.
I'm the only one with sufficient expertise to pull it off.
That's a yes, then.
Yes.
You're dismissed, but remember, I'll be watching you.
Thornton saw a new look of doubt and suspicion in the eyes behind the glasses.
What?
I should confirm this with General...
Thornton grabbed up the phone.
Let's see how he feels about you wasting his time.
Anderson held his ground, thinking about it, then shook his head.
Let it be on record, I am opposed to this.
Duly noted. Something goes wrong, it's my ass they fry back at the Pentagon.
Anderson held his ground, a grim smirk on his face.
If there's anything left to fry.
Thornton took the small remote, hit a button, and released the lock on the steel door. Anderson left, looking to Thornton as if he had just aged another 10 years. Now to start finding out who was with him and who was against him among his own ranks. Thornton slid the Beretta free, resting it on the console for easy access. Bolin followed the wheezing and the huffing coming up out of the wash to a point where he found himself on the lip, looking down on their rear, roughly 100 paces out. The executioner dropped behind a boulder, then brought the M16 around the edge. He counted 10 of them, wandering around his SUV, peeking inside, inspecting the front-end damage.
Well, this is his SUV.
No shit, Gino.
Banged up like the spoke said.
So where the hell is he?
How the fuck should I know, Donnie? Let's spread out and go find him. Big guy, big guns.
Yeah, so the spook said. What if it's more than one guy?
What if it is? There's 10 of us.
All right.
The executioner pulled out 2 more rounds from his war bag, another frag bomb and a buckshot round for the M203.
So, now what, boss? We go traipsing all over the desert looking for some guy we've never seen?
Hey, we'll do whatever it takes. I'm not leaving without that asshole's head in a sack.
Enough. Bolin had the gist of it. He couldn't pin down the accents, but they sounded Midwest, probably Chicago. And Bolin knew mob when he saw it. Clearly, they were city boys, probably accustomed to rolling out of bed at the crack of noon, gone soft. They had broken out the heavier hardware from opened trunks, and he could bet they hadn't come all this way to pack it up at the first sign the going would get tough. Subguns and assault rifles, even wielded by subpar talent, could prove deadly enough. To a fancy shirt, they had an automatic weapon, with sidearms either openly displayed or bulging under silk jackets. Once again, Bolin figured Thornton had contrived a wild card factor to do his dirty work. The executioner knew his ancient war against the Mafia hadn't, of course, wiped the scourge of organized crime off the American landscape. Most of the old dinosaurs were pretty much, however, extinct by now. A few ancient dons were still creaking around, barely holding on against the conniving rat packs under their own roofs, with feds planted on their doorsteps around the clock, and the new breed of up-and-comers who were pretty much all show and little go, waiting for the old men to finally croak. Yes, Bolin had blazed through their ranks long ago, kicked enough ass to send them into bloody disarray. But they said cockroaches would be the only survivors of a full-scale nuclear holocaust. The analogy here was obvious.
Second thought. Let's go take a ride around these hills, boys.
The executioner slipped his finger through the trigger of the M203. The pack was splitting up, huffing and puffing back for the vehicles. He folded back into cover of the boulder, in case a couple of pairs of nervous eyes darted his way before he was ready to unload. A few more seconds, riding out the wait, and Bolin would introduce himself.
Whew, holy fuck, it's hot out here.
Could really go for a brew right about now.
Hey, Gino, Prostitution's legal in this state, isn't it? How far are we from Reno?
The old instincts warned Leonetti they were being watched. The HK-33 assault rifle was up and fanning the ridgelines on both sides of the wash. Nothing he could see up top. The sun hammered down, dropping a shimmering curtain in his eyes. Forget hearing any movement, such as a shoe scuffing rock or a sharp intake of breath, since his soldiers were babbling now among themselves, huffing about like old women. It didn't make sense to Leonetti. He pulled up short of the lead town car, looking around. Why would the guy just abandon his SUV? Unless he knew he was being followed, spotting them on his tail earlier, on foot now, obviously. Circling in from behind?
Gino, Petey, Donnie, hold up.
What is it, boss?
Keep your voices down.
Leonetti was sure he'd just seen movement, up there, along the top edge of the rock wall, at some point off to the rear of the second town car. It was a blur, maybe the sun and the heat playing tricks on his eyes, but he'd swear a figure had just melted the cover behind a fat rock above them.
Okay, this is what we're going to...
And then his grim suspicion became a horrifying reality. The figure popped up over the rock like something in a carnival, a massive weapon in his fists. The old instincts told Leonetti to hit the deck, but the legs wouldn't respond to the warning cry in his head. It was like one of those bad dreams where the feds were chasing him, but he was paralyzed. He got some much unwanted help in the next instant as the explosion tore through a few of his soldiers near the second town car. The shockwave reached out, a giant fist, hurling metal and wet pieces of flesh in his face. Ugh! Leonetti squeezed his eyes shut out of instinct, his ears full of thunder and the screams of his men carved up by flying shrapnel. Before he knew it, he was on his back, but he was still breathing, and now he was really pissed. Clearly, Shadow Man had been right all along. The guy, Belasco, was up there, ready to stick it to him again.
God damn it! Where the hell are they? I'm gonna roast out here in this fucking inferno!
Kramen cursed everything and everyone under the sun, especially the sunlight. He had no more pills, no water at any rate to swallow one, even if he did. And where the hell was Thornton's rescue? Oh, but he intended to see Thornton pay for this humiliation, leaving him stranded like this. The bastard was safe and smug, probably cooling off at the facility, even chuckling over his predicament. Kramen would fix him in due course. He had planned to anyway, once the backup unit from the east was on hand tonight. Thornton didn't know it yet, but Kramen had been sent along an envelope with cash and note, unsigned, that simply stated for them to be prepared when they were called to act. Thornton would think they were more NSA black ops, arriving at the site to beef up depleted guns. Thornton was in for a very rude awakening. But first, Kramen had to get out of there. Panic set in next. And steam, he saw, was hissing from under the hood. The air conditioning died next, and Kramen cried out in horror.
Oh, God, no.
He would have to get out now or suffocate. He would have to walk, but he feared he would die from the first few steps he ventured across the salt flat, the sun burning up his brain. Visions of shooting down Thornton and Belasco stoked his rage and terror. He was shaking now, balled up against the door, curling up into a fetal position.
Mr. Kramen!
One of Thornton's men. Could he see inside through the tinted glass? See him blubbering, the great man with the plan? No, of course not. Kramen realized he was hyperventilating, unable to respond as the man kept hitting the window, calling his name. Thornton was a dead man, he decided. But first, the device. Once he had that in his hands...
Mr. Kramen!
Somehow he found his voice.
Pull your van up alongside the door.
He would have to step out into the light, no matter what.
Yes, sir.
Hurry! This side! The driver's side!
He tried to steel himself, pull it together. He had to appear strong, in control once the door was opened. He saw the van's shadow falling over the well. He sucked in a long breath, felt some composure returning, the shaking in his limbs fading a little. Escape, relief was coming. First, he needed to fight his way through the goddamn light. Thornton hit the button on the metal box that would carry his voice to the intercom beside the door outside in the hall.
It's open, Benson.
He kept his back turned as the man entered.
Sir, we have a situation in the East Quadrant.
Close the door, Benson.
Thornton knew all about the situation. Belasco was kicking ass again, only this time in living color on a monitor to his right. That wasn't the work of any Justice Department issue, the guy winging down a grenade into the pack of mobsters, bowling down three right off the bat. But Thornton already knew the guy was far more than he claimed.
Sir, security is being violated. The manual states that we must initiate immediate and decisive action in the event of an armed intruder. Also, sir, I and a few others have questions about procedures the past 2 days.
Names.
Sir?
Who is doing all this squawking?
Why, I wouldn't call it that, but, well, Matthews, Thomas, and Corley. We have some questions.
You're dismissed, Benson.
Sir?
Oh!
Before the body even hit the floor, Thornton was up and dragging the corpse to the corner of the room. Three were down. The second 40mm frag projectile was dumped into the M203's black hole, and Bolin rose over the boulder, sweeping them with a long burst of auto-fire. The Aloha Shirt Convention was gathering some speed when the first line of 5.56mm lead hosed a slab of human flesh. Too beefy and too slow to ever have a hope in hell of beating the warrior's tracking line of fire. The survivors darted for cover behind the front ends of the luxury rigs, subguns spraying and praying to cover their flight. A fresh clip cracked home, a few heads popped up over the front end, and shaky hands winging off more wild rounds from subguns, and Folan went back to work with the M16. They came close, three or four rounds snapping the air around Bolin when he turned both town cars to ventilated scrap. The wall of Bolin's flying lead raked the luxury vehicles, stem to stern. They could run and hide, but no one was leaving. Glass took to the air in sheets and countless gleaming shrapnel bits, a howl or two of pain as he either clipped another shooter with lead or someone received a glass facial. Tires blew under the onslaught, the radiator erupting in a hissing white cloud. Before the rigs flattened out, Bolin pumped off another 40mm round, dropping the projectile into the closest hunk of metal. The fireball belched out the doors, blew the roof into warped tin. And it appeared to the soldier they didn't know what to do next. They were like mannequins, frozen and gawking at the horror of it all, even as the world was blowing up in their faces. The thundering shockwave had kicked one shooter off to the side, the vehicle jumping up in the air before it settled back on limp tread with a pounding crunch. The fuel line had to have been punctured by either the blast or all the lead he'd poured over the vehicles, but a secondary explosion ignited. He took a moment to get his bearings, the lay of the land down the top edge of the wash. It rose in broken humps and jags, perfect to shield his move toward their rear. The way they'd suddenly gone silent and still, hugging cover, told the soldier he'd have to go down there now and root them out anyway. Four fancy shirts left. He could have burned up another 40mm round or two, but wasn't sure what he'd be facing later and needed to be conservative. He was never afraid to do things the hard way, if it came down to that. Bolin crouched, advancing the few steps up the narrow gully cut into the near vertical face. He risked leaving the war bag behind, simply to lighten his load, opting instead for speed to wrap this up ASAP. On his way out, he spotted the eye of the camera, buried in the ground. He couldn't be sure, but he hoped Thornton was watching the show. The executioner threw a mock salute to the camera, then set off to wrap up the mob convention. The big badass had some pair on him. Thornton had to give the guy that much.
Yeah, fuck you too, soldier.
Thornton returned the salute with his middle finger before the bastard vanished off the screen. If the Don was dead, Thornton couldn't tell. And what did it matter anyway? The camera showed the flaming heap, the smoking bodies. At last count, he knew six of Chicago's meanest were out of the picture. Meanest? That was a joke. He might as well have recruited soccer moms. While whoever was left standing, or hiding, which was more likely the case, Thornton figured Belasco was moving out to come in on their rear, tie up the package up close and personal, maybe grill one of the goons. Not that it mattered if one of the Chicago hitters filled Belasco in on what little they knew. Thornton knew he was next on the bastard's shopping list. At least, he saw the science detail was decked out in hazmat suits, starting the process of pumping the radiation laced with the element into the device. Another lead bin of the element was now being slowly driven from the sister site. Garner was patching through. He was one of the few ops on site that Thornton could trust to help him seize the device. Even in the spook world, Thornton knew money talked. It was something of a plus that more than a few of the ops now on the way to beef up the numbers were either former NSA assassins or had sold their services around the world as soldiers of fortune. He knew they would prove themselves loyal in the end to the hand that fed. Whether their cut came out of his pocket or Crommon had to cough up a few dollars more.
Sir, what about the situation in the East Quad?
Let it be.
Sir?
Let it be. I want you in the briefing room in 20 minutes.
He heard Corley's voice over the speaker next.
Here, sir.
Thornton let them in. The trio marched into the room.
Close the door, Corley.
What's that smell?
By the time Matthews spotted the heap of his fallen comrade in the far corner, Thornton had the subgun up.
Where the hell is he, boss?
How the fuck should I know?
Vince Leonetti didn't know much at all right then, except that all four of them were in a world of hurt. For the first time he could remember, he was, in fact, clueless and very much afraid of dying. And one bastard had done all this? The stink of Marino's toasted skin was swelling up the nausea in the Don's belly as he fisted the sweat out of his eyes. He risked a look over the town car's hood, scanning the empty lip of the wash. Nothing. The guy was gone, like a ghost vanishing into thin air. Likewise, it was hard to make out any sound beyond their hiding point, the flames eating up the town car. Fratelli, Donnie, and Bodolico were all sucking wind, statues of fear. It was unbelievable. It had been a long time since Leonetti had pulled the trigger, granted, but he couldn't have lost this much edge over the span of a few short years. A brief but vivid recollection of all the guys he'd wasted over the years seemed to dance a montage of faces through his head. Rivals, witnesses, snitches, even a cop who wouldn't be bought, and that lawyer who had been more interested in scribbling memoirs than defending him against 20 life sentences. No, he wasn't opposed to taking down a man, armed or in cold blood. But this? Rockets and his own men dropping like dominoes under precision auto fire? This was more like something out of Bosnia or Beirut. He had to make the effort just to remind himself they were in Nevada, the good old U.S. of fucking A. And that, as far as he could tell, they were up against only one man. Jesus. Some feral rage, perhaps brought on by sheer panic, had Fratelli swinging up the Mac-10 to bear on Boland's SUV.
What are you doing?
Leonetti swatted the muzzle away.
You plan on walking all the way back to Reno, numbnuts?
Leonetti grasped his HK-33 tighter, the assault rifle feeling unusually heavy, as if it wanted to slide right out of his sweaty palms. He checked the jagged slope, a narrow gully running up the side for the top east edge. A plan came to him. No way would he sit there and wait for the bastard to come to them.
Okay, we're going up top that way. Gain the high ground. That's how the bastard took the edge in the first place.
They didn't look convinced it was that simple.
Get your thumbs out of your asses and let's go.
The Don had spoken, and Leonetti was breaking cover, leading the charge for the high ground, when all hell broke loose again. The flaming purple shirt with the Mac-10 would have spotted him on the advance to their rear if the boss hadn't stepped in, concerned about the only available ride out. The executioner surged past his SUV and started round two. Holding back on the M16's trigger, he nearly made it a clean sweep. They were breaking out in a sluggish, staggered line, going for an opening, a way out of the wash. Boland chopped the first mobster to shreds, then tracked on. Two subguns and one HK-33 were swinging around, a last-ditch gasp on their part to draw blood. Boland showered them with lead, eating up the silk shirts. Number 8 was spinning on his heels, snarling out the venom but tumbling out of play, when Bolin adjusted his aim. Up close now, Bolin put a name on the face of the white-haired man. Vince Leonetti had escaped the executioner's brand of justice over the years, more out of luck and a conflict with Bolin's own busy schedule than anything else. Funny how things happened, though, Bolin thought. Whether it was pure accident or misguided sense of loyalty to protect the boss, but another shooter who'd seen one too many buffets shuffled into Bolin's line of fire. The executioner beat a sidestep out of the blazing lead rain, rounds slashing the air he just vacated. Shooting from the hip, Bolin stitched him crotch to sternum. The Don nosedived out of sight into a rocky gully.
Ah, fuck!
The executioner heard the Don throwing out vicious curses between ragged gasps. Bolin moved in behind the shield of fire, angling down the burning town card to bring the man into sight. The Don started triggering wild bursts from cover, winging bullets down the wash. It was blind panic, pretty much, but that didn't make the man any less dangerous. Okay, Bolin decided, the hard way. So be it. There was a sudden lull in the shooting, the Don probably weighing his options. Less than zero.
Let's go, Vince. I don't have all day to play games.
Leonetti froze. He nearly laughed out loud in bitter spite at those words. The bastard made it sound as if he had a busy day ahead of him, that this was just some poor man's skirmish, an irritating diversion against a few punks with guns. Made it sound that he should walk right out of there and take it like a man. And how the hell did he know? He struggled onto a knee, the assault rifle up and ready again, his eyes burning from sweat but trying to focus on any movement beyond his perch. A piece of flesh was missing from his right arm, blood running freely.
Who the hell are you?
If he got the guy talking again, there was a chance he could cap off a burst, nail the bastard from where the voice sounded.
You with Bartlett?
I'm with me.
The man said you took my money.
The man lied to you.
You telling me I've been set up?
More like used to do his dirty work.
What? He's got my money?
There is no money, Vince. There's just you, me, and a con job you fell into. The man sees you as disposable.
The mobster pinned the voice to the tall shadow, rising up out of nowhere. Leonetti was sweeping the assault rifle around as the guy appeared, as if by magic, on the other side of the fire, devouring the town car. Before he even pulled back on the trigger, Leonetti knew it was over. Bolin walked up, confirmed it was over with a nudge to the ribs. There was nothing in the eyes but frozen rage. The question now was, would the Black Ops agents use the time he'd burned up on the mob party to scramble the troops? After slapping a fresh clip into his M16, another 40mm hellbomb down the M203's chute, Bolin made swift progress out of the wash. Topping out, he scanned the open ground around the two facilities beyond a rolling stretch of broken tableland. All quiet, all still, and it felt all wrong. They had circled the wagons, hunkered down inside, sitting tight, waiting for the night's big show. He moved down the lip, setting off to retrieve the war bag. Other than waiting for night to come, Bolin figured there wasn't much he could do but ride it out. If they came for him, fine. If not, the executioner would go inside. One way or another, he would be there when Kromen came to take the device. The curtain had dropped on the slaughter show, the Don long since on his way to the other world. Now, what Thornton couldn't figure was what the hell Belasco was up to next. The guy was out there, taking a casual drive, then a stroll on foot around the far perimeters. The bastard was hardly ready to break out the picnic basket and champagne. He was out there looking for openings, any weakness in defenses, hoping to get a fix on the numbers of shooters inside. Well, there was only one way the bastard could get inside, and that was straight through the front door. Perhaps that was exactly what Belasco intended. A full charge right up the gut, blasting his way in, shooting up the facility. That should be a suicide move, but wherever he walked, Belasco was like some lightning rod of death and destruction. Thornton was nearly ashamed of himself for having so underestimated the man's martial talent, or placing too much faith in the hands of clearly marginal skill. The Trojans and the Chicago gangsters never stood a chance. Oh well, live and learn. Crommon was on the handheld radio once again. He had almost forgotten all about the freak, having ordered the operative he had dispatched to round him up simply to take him to his mobile home, sit on him. And what could Crommon do about it? Since he deemed himself too good to drive his own car and couldn't possibly walk around in the sun, Thornton snapped up his handheld radio, sniffing the air. The bodies in the room were starting to get a little ripe.
Yes?
When this is finished, you and I are going to settle up. Thornton, you aren't in charge of this, do you hear me?
Aye, aye, loud and clear.
Don't patronize me.
There's something you should know.
Let me guess. You have Belasco perched on your doorstep.
That was exactly what Thornton saw on the monitor. The guy was parked on a ledge in the neighborhood of a quarter mile south. Just standing by, waiting for the night to come. A lion ready to pounce.
I scrambled the backup unit.
So, you're thinking ahead and about what we must do. Good. I'm keeping the shipping procedure to myself for the time being. Just have it ready at the gate to be choppered out. When our stooges go in and the shooting starts, with Belasco still lurking around, I've arranged an alternative to move the device. Oh, and Thornton, I expect to see that chopper in my yard as soon as the sun begins to go down. Roughly an hour from now. Don't force me to drive myself there.
It's your show.
Indeed it is.
Thornton stood. The idea was to use the cultists to round up, then mow down the science detail and the civilian labor force. Once Nellis came here to investigate, a fair amount of the blame could be laid on the cultists. That much made sense to Thornton. By the time the special investigative detail from Nellis sifted through the wreckage, ID'd all the bodies, discovered the wonder toy of the ages was missing, Thornton would be well out of the country, with money in his pocket and a load of cash socked away in an overseas numbered account. There was a sweet and promising future to look forward to. Tahiti sounded pretty good. Or Thailand. Someplace far away where there were no Crommons or Belascos. Garner patched through.
Sir, the backup team has just arrived.
About time, Thornton thought, moving for the door. The first string, the heavy hitters, were finally pulling up to the gate. The bus was a Black Mariah, the sort of rig they used to haul convicted felons to prison. Bolin watched, curious, as the bus pulled up and Thornton stepped through a narrow slat in the dome to greet the new arrivals. The windows were, he noted, black-tinted, so he could forget about getting a clear early head count on the number of new shooters. M16 in hand, the soldiers strolled down along the ridge, cutting the gap until he could start counting heads at a closer angle as they disembarked. 200 and some yards closer, and he used the field glasses. One by one, they stepped off the bus. He framed Thornton in the glasses, the guy actually looking his way, and Bolin half expected the middle finger salute. The eyes may be hidden by dark shades, but there was no mistaking the new look of confidence radiating from Thornton's expression. A few heads among the black-suited crew turned in Bolin's direction. These guys had hair, some beards and stubble, a mustache or two, an eye patch on one guy, dark shades all around. They looked more like felons on work releases than the clean-cut black ops Bolin had seen up to then. More like mercenaries. 15 in all. Stone-cold killers. They lugged large black nylon bags, bulging with the heavy stuff Bolin could well guess they were anxious to use. The executioner considered dumping a 40-millimeter charge into the ranks, then passed. Soon. The sun was waning, shadows already reaching dark skeletal fingers over the valley. When darkness fell, he would walk down into the Valley of Death. Thornton smiled. He had to believe that these badass saviors would lead him out of the dark tunnel. Carey, Jones, Barlow, and McMurtry piled out and fell in. It was good to see these men again, aware of the reputations that preceded them. They had done wet work, he knew, in places like Beirut, Damascus, Angola, and Myanmar, just to name a few third-world hellholes where life was cheap. These were the best guns money could buy. They had also been used before, Thornton knew, in various black projects, as a last resort. Emergency muscle, and the word failure wasn't in their manual. Bags were dumped, a few cigarettes going up with the touch of a lighter. Thornton nearly felt like a proud papa. Then the cleanup boss of bosses rolled off the bus last. He was muscled, a mop of shoulder-length white hair like a halo in the fading sunlight. Stubble on the chin, his face looked carved by a hatchet, sharp and angry. A couple of scars along the jaw where he had taken some shrapnel or flying lead. And he was known in Black Ops circles as Mr. 71. The floating rumor was the man had, a few years back, engaged in a running bet with another operative. The game, Thornton had heard, was to see who could break the old record of the wet work body count. Reportedly, 66 confirmed kills. The scuttlebutt was the other op was ahead by two bodies. One kill from tying the old record, when he had a strange and sudden accident in the Sudan. Something about a boating mishap on the Nile. Due to a few roving, hungry crocodiles, the body was never found. Or so the story went. Mr. 71 didn't play to lose.
Gentlemen, glad you could make it.
71 fired up an unfiltered cigarette, stepping down from the bus.
I trust a little R&R has got the batteries recharged.
They were too busy watching the big shape of Belasco on the rise. The guy sure as hell wasn't too concerned about not being seen. 71 blew smoke back at Thornton.
Who's that?
That, Mr. 71, is the problem.
The cigarette nearly disappeared in one massive intake of smoke. 71 pitched the butt away, then reclaimed his bag.
Not anymore.
The onset of twilight brought the anticipated activity down below. It looked low-key at first, but Boland saw a few of them moving with a sense of urgency. The executioner had donned a black suit and was harnessed and buckled, weighted down with enough grenades and spare clips to tackle big numbers, ready to rock. Thornton and the white-haired gargantuan came out of the dome. The rotors were spinning to life, but Thornton was waving two black-suited gunners into the belly of the black chopper. Apparently, he was staying behind to guard the lair. Why? And where was the bird headed? Winged pylons showed the soldier that rockets were housed, and Boland figured there was a machine gun or two in the nose turret. The executioner took up position on the far side of the SUV, lifting the M16-M203 combo. It wouldn't take much effort on the part of the flyboys to blow him off the hill, and if they started his way, nose down, he'd have no choice but to fire off a 40mm round. Figuring the black chopper was armor-plated, he decided one well-placed round to the tail rotor would do the job nicely. And there was still no sign of Crommon. The bird lifted off, Thornton and the big guy holding their turf in front of the dome. Moments later, Boland saw the chopper streaking over the desert, eastbound. Now what? Rounding up Crommon? Was Thornton hoping he'd follow the black chopper? But Boland was staying put. Boland dug in just the same, alert for any movement around the compass, any shadows headed his way. The darker it got, the closer it came to showtime.
I appreciate the cash incentive we've been receiving. Money's always nice. It's what makes the world go round, according to Candor and Ebb.
There were a couple of disturbing revelations there that caught Thornton by surprise, but he kept the puzzled look off his face. Someone else had been sending along this monetary incentive on the sly. And just as startling, 71 was into show tunes. Since Thornton hadn't been sending the money, it had to be Crommon. This latest maneuver by the freak, and behind his back, started nagging Thornton with two concerns, feeding doubt that he was meant to see his own payday. One, Crommon had already reached out to the heavy hitters, greasing the skids, buying their loyalty, perhaps ready to make the announcement at a critical juncture that he was their bank of Project Orion. Two, Crommon had to have already received a down payment for the device from the foreign subcontractors, all along holding back any cash advance from Thornton, the man who had the power to facilitate his plans from the inside. Sneaky freak bastard.
You know what to do?
Hard to believe one guy has kicked all the ass you said he has.
I showed you the man's work on the video. Believe it. The guy's been a major pain in the ass. Real Rambo shit.
Rambo was a pussy.
Right.
Soon as the chopper drops off half the cult nutjobs at the sister site, believing they're free to take some of the super tech for themselves, I'll send four of the boys out to say hello to our Mr. Sunshine. Last thing I want is some wild card fucking things up when we've got a busy night ahead of us.
This is Kromen's gig for the most part. We follow orders, get the thing in the chopper. There's going to be shooting. Chaos out the wazoo when we let the wackos in to hold down their part of the game plan.
Cannon fodder to take care of all non-essential personnel. I like it. Then what? Kromen can't really intend to let the cult freaks in on the story, the NSA's cosmic Watergate.
That's where you step in and fill in the blanks for the wackos.
Lambs to the slaughter.
But Thornton had to wonder who the lambs were really going to be when the slaughter began. He didn't want to even consider it, but he hoped to hell 71 wasn't underestimating Belasco's threat. Failure couldn't be an option here. Failure meant he was dead, and Kromen was skipping off to the wild unknown, the marvel of humankind in tow. Thornton caught 71 throwing him a glance.
Lighten up. The party's just about to start.